This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
You're listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of The Province. Here are your hosts, Paul Chapman and E. Spencer Kite.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Keyboard Kimura podcast here on Province Sports Radio. I'm your host, E. Spencer Kite, joined by my punch-drunk predictions partner in crime, Patrick Shivik-Linsky. We are taping this on Wednesday evening, August 17th, about 6 hours after a whole bunch of nonsense went down at the David Copperfield Theater inside the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, Nevada, where the UFC 202 press conference started without Conor McGregor. He then showed up late. A couple minutes later, Nate Diaz said peace and I'm out, started throwing the birds and some insults as he was walking out, and then all hell broke loose with some more F-bombs, some trademark kind of Conor McGregor saying shit that you probably shouldn't say because it's racist and everybody laughs, but God, it sounds awful when you hear it back. There were water bottles thrown. There were cans of Monster Energy drinks thrown. It was a complete shit show. I'm going to let you start so I don't get into like fired up, angry, upset dude mode. So what were your thoughts on the scene today in Vegas and everything that went down in general?
I mean, you know, like up to that point in the press conference, I was kind of expecting something to happen. I think in the back of our heads, most of us were expecting at least some kind of verbal exchange to happen between these two guys. It almost felt like too quiet for the longest time. It was like, okay, these guys are sitting up there. They're not really addressing each other. Yeah, Conor came in, as you said, late. Pretty darn late, actually. And
Nice for once to see the UFC be like, you know what? Dude needs to learn how to tell time and show up properly.
Because
I've been at a bunch of these things where you sit around waiting for Conor McGregor to turn up. And it can be anywhere from 30 minutes to 45 minutes. It's been an hour at times. I mean, he did the gym thing last Friday and talking to people that were there, he showed up an hour late. And as much as you think, oh, it's great, you get to go and interview Conor McGregor and see him work out, that's an hour of wasted time. It's not like you're somewhere where there's great Wi-Fi and you can do a bunch of stuff. You're standing around waiting on this dude. Continue.
Absolutely. No, and I mean, I fully agree with that. I'm glad that Dana White decided that, you know what, we're going to go on with this press conference, Conor, no Conor. This is a press conference. There's media here who came on time. There's fans here who came on time. Let's do this thing and keep it rolling. But by the time Conor came around, and then he sat down and started answering questions, it did kind of feel like, you know, a little bit too, almost too nice between these two guys. So just kind of no interaction going on between the two. And then suddenly, you know, Nate decides, you know what? Peace out. UFC, start respecting my time too. And I actually like the move from Nate Diaz's perspective because, you know what? This guy's a superstar as well. And, you know, his time needs to be respected as well. And I think he was just kind of showing Conor, he was sunning him. He was like, listen, you want to show up late? Guess what? Peace out. You can run this whole press conference by yourself. I'm going to go. And then what ensued afterwards was just absolute madness. And, some throwing of water bottles, some flipping of birds, as you said, and it was just complete chaos in, you know, that venue there. And I don't know what to think of it still. And I just have that, the words from Dana White kind of stuck in my head where he's like, Conor, don't you throw that bottle.
He sounded like a parent trying to convince his pain in the ass, petulant child to stop being a jackass in the grocery store.
Exactly.
But before we get to the way it all ended, I agree with you 100% on the awesomeness of Nathan Diaz getting up and walking out. It was weird leading into this that there was not... Connor and Nate clearly are not friends. There's clearly not a, like, we're just, this is just business, no hard feelings. But there was a mutual respect when they did the conference call 2 weeks ago, because Nate stepped up, came in, got the victory. Now he's going out and he's earning what he has always wanted. And Connor spoke about, you know, respecting that. And so it wasn't that back and forth that we expected. And a lot of people came away from it doing the, like, well, that was weird. These guys are kind of getting along and at least not just MFing each other the whole time. I thought today's move of getting up and leaving, and there are reports coming from Las Vegas saying that Nick Diaz kind of showed up and looked at his brother and was like, yo, let's roll. And Nathan being Nathan was just like, Nick said we're out, so we're out. I think it's a great move. I think he 100% owns a lot of real estate in Conor McGregor's mind. And for a guy that has not built his career strictly on mental warfare, but benefited from playing mind games with opponents, it is awesome to see Conor McGregor on the receiving end of it and seeing how easily and quickly Nathan Diaz can get a rise out of him. I think that factors into things on Saturday night. We'll get to predictions in a little bit. But I think the walkout was great. The part that bugs me and the part that just drives me mental, and I posed this question on Twitter as everything was finishing and as everybody was doing, like, that was great, it's adding pay-per-view buys, and this is, now it's got the buzz. And my question was, is there a point where we stop saying, ah, oh, this was great, it's going to sell more tickets, it's going to move more units, and we expect these guys and demand of these guys to be professionals, whether it's showing up on time, as Conor McGregor does not like to do, whether it's not walking out, flipping everybody off, and dropping F-bombs all over the place, and chucking water bottles and energy drinks, and wanting to get into some big team rumble 2 days before or 3 days before you're going to fight. And the really shitty part to me is that what always ends up happening is we have these incidents and they become the points that most of the mainstream media and most of the media that doesn't ever pay attention to this sport focuses in on. And this becomes what people see. People that have no idea about this sport or no idea about the 95% of the athletes in the UFC that never do this stuff, that this is never coming from, that are never engaged in this kind of nonsense. There were three people that showed up on time today, and two other people that had no part of the shenanigans that took place at the MGM Grand. And nobody's going to talk about them, just like nobody talks about, unfortunately, the vast majority of the roster that toes the line, does the right thing, are professional to a T. Is there a point where we have to just say enough is enough? Like, if you're the new owners, do you see that and go, ka-ching, we're getting more buys? Or do you look at it and go, we're trying to be recognized on the level of the NFL and the NHL and the NBA, and this shit wouldn't fly there. We need to curb it here.
Yeah, this is the thing. I mean, they're at a very pivotal kind of crossroad right now where, you know, the new ownership can let this kind of stuff go on and let the pay-per-view, you know, numbers pile up and really take advantage of a situation like this, or they can, you know, take that route, you know, and try to become a legitimate sport, a legitimate, you know, sport that is not just, you know, a spectacle or a 30-second clip of these dudes calling each other mother effers, you know what I mean? So I think that, you know, I would definitely, you know, like to see some more professionalism out of these guys, because like you said, there's so many guys that are doing the right thing, that are professional guys and come in on time and do all the right things. And, you know, this kind of stuff, while yes, again, it is entertaining and it definitely brings a lot of eyes, it does look bad as well. I mean, we saw it with what happened with Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier, obviously. I mean, that was a crazy situation and something that, you know, you know, got a lot of views on YouTube and got a lot of eyes from people who normally wouldn't be interested in the UFC. But at the same time, it made those two dudes look like two dudes that just lost their friggin' cool and acted like, you know, barbarians out there, man. Like, it was absolutely insane. These are professional fighters. They get paid to fight in an octagon. They don't get paid to fight in the streets. That's what makes them different than, you know, Joe Schmo at a bar fighting some dude because, you know, he stepped on his shoes, and someone who fights professionally. They're, you know, it can't. I mean, in my eyes, I don't think that there's any place for professional fighters to be fighting outside of the octagon. It just shouldn't happen.
It's the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. E. Spencer Kite, Patrick Shivik-Linsky talking about the UFC 202 press conference melee today in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand. I'm with you 100% on that. I mean, I think it's one of those things where the UFC, see, for me, and I'm by the time people hear this, I will have a story up. I will have a column up on Province Sports talking about it, because there's no way for me to sit here and process this without trying to get it all out in words. But to me, this feels like one of those key moments where if the UFC actually paid attention to and wanted to enforce its own code of conduct and that policy that they have, there should be some kind of fines here. I'm not going to advocate for call off the fight, because that's just crazy nonsense. But like, if one of those cans of Monster hits somebody, that goes from being a spectacle to something serious that they're going to have to deal with. And in no way should you ever just look at this and go, yeah, we're disappointed, but we move forward. Because to me, that looks like you just, like you don't care that this happens. And it almost encourages this stuff to keep happening, which is unfortunate for all the other people on the roster that don't behave in this manner. It's the same as the calling people out and promoting athletes based on their ability to talk or their looks or anything outside of the results they earn inside the cage. They're doing what they can do and being true to themselves and being professional and following the rules. And what do they get for it? In a lot of cases, you look at a guy like Neil Magny, as professional as they come, wants to fight every month if he can, always answers the call. What does he get? Lorenz Larkin on Fight Pass. It's a good spot. They're getting some promotion. It's a good fight. He's happy to be back. But most of these people that follow the rules, do the right thing, act professionally, aren't getting on SportsCenter because they're hucking bottles of Monster around a theater with a whole bunch of fans and media and other fighters around, don't get a lot from it. And that's a weird spot to be in. And so it'll be interesting to see. I know the NAC has said that they'll look into it and sort of act in the regular process of their commission. So it means they're not going to suddenly just hand out fines tonight. But at some point, I wouldn't be surprised if both guys get fined by the NAC. But the UFC needs to do something, in my eyes. And it needs to set the tone. And if you're the new owners that just paid $4 billion in change, that's not the image I want. That's not the thing I want people seeing going into what is actually a really great fight. Like, stylistically and from a storyline perspective, this is a great fight. And we don't need this nonsense. I wrote a piece earlier this week saying that it's intriguing but exhausting at the same time, because I am done with all of this puffing out the chest, Homer Simpson references, flipping the middle fingers, MF and all of that stuff. Like, just get in the cage and resolve this so we can move forward, because it is a really cool fight. It is a great matchup in terms of, can Conor make the correct adjustments? Can Nathan Diaz do it again? But you gotta focus on that if you're the UFC, and you need to spend more time pointing people's attention to that side of things, whether it's this fight or others, and taking it away from the nonsense that happens. And of course, what do we end up getting in the immediate aftermath of that? But the UFC Twitter account posting, which side are you on? With the little hashtag logos for Diaz and McGregor taped to water bottles.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they definitely, you know, took full advantage of that opportunity. They did the kind of water bottle flip challenge. I saw those were going around. I mean, it definitely felt like another situation where, you know what, we're just going to roll with it and take advantage of this because it's probably going to get pay-per-view buys. The one thing that I did like, the one thing that I will add out of this whole thing that was at the, you know, very end when Conor McGregor, it seemed like he was trying to sit back down and continue the press conference after that. And I was like, what? Really?
Right.
And,
right.
And I did like that Dana White stepped in and said, no, get him out of here.
We'll see you Saturday.
Exactly. I think that was the best move that Dana White could have made at the time. And I definitely commend him for doing that because that, you know, shows him, listen, I'm still the boss. You still have to respect this. And guess what? You're out of here. We're going to do this on Saturday.
Yeah, this had the potential. Nate Diaz getting up and walking out had the potential to be Isaiah Thomas and the Detroit Pistons walking off the court against the Chicago Bulls at the Palace before the game was over. I want to say 91, 92, maybe somewhere in there, where they just walked off, refused to shake hands, just bounced. Just, we're out of here. These are our rivals. We don't like them. This sucks. Our run as champions are over. We're out. Kiss my ass, Michael. We're gone. And it turned into a bunch of bullshit. And it sucks. And I hope it stops. Because there are so many cool stories and great stories that we're not reporting, that we're not talking about. And if all we care about, if all anybody wants to see and is worried about going into these events is, oh, well, that added the buzz that was missing and that added 100,000 pay-per-view buys, then let's just go the Bellator route and make a bunch of crazy ass fights and pump as much fake drama and BS into it and pump up these rivalries and not worry about skill set and style and anything like that and just go that way. But if you, to me, it feels like the UFC is in a point right now where they're kind of straddling the fence and trying to play both sides of the line between being professional athletes when people say these guys are barbarians and playing up this drama and hype and craziness that we saw today when people say, well, there's not that much hype and there's not that much interest and you know, there, yeah, it's a good fight, but there's no real sizzle to it. It's just a nice steak. And so for me personally, and I don't think this is ever going to happen because there is the entertainment side of this sport. And I get that. I would love to see them curb some of that because you can still have the entertainment and you can still have the hype and the promotion and the push of it without it going over the line like it did today. It's the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. E. Spencer Kite and Patrick Shivik-Linsky. We have talked about the nonsense of today. Let's talk about the fight itself. Saturday night, UFC 202 main event, Conor McGregor, Nathan Diaz doing the damn thing again. I was there the first time and was shocked by the way it finished. Posted up my tweets on a story earlier this week on Province Sports from the night, sort of tracking the progression. I had Conor McGregor out Diazing Nate Diaz. I had this turning into a one-sided, the end is going to come soon, and then had to hit you with a hold up, wait a minute, because Nathan Diaz roared back. We get the rematch, put away all the, it shouldn't be happening, there's other fights that should happen. It is coming. How do you see it playing out?
Yeah, man, I've been so back and forth on this for the last, you know, I don't know, few months now, man, ever since this thing was announced. I've been back and forth on who I think's going to win. You know, as it stands right now, and I think the guy who I'm going with, I got to go with Nate Diaz. There's really, you know, nothing that I can see. I mean, Conor definitely has made a lot of adjustments, as he said. You know, his camp is reported to be, you know, a six-figure camp. He's brought in all these big bodies in to emulate Nate Diaz and do, you know, these new techniques and try to really pace himself a lot more. As he says, he needs to be more patient with the big man and kind of, you know, I think his plan going into this fight is going to be a lot more of that stick and move that we saw in the first round of the fight where he was, you know, popping jabs and staying elusive and quick on the feet. But honestly, man, like, at the end of the day, Nate Diaz is a tough son of a bitch, man. Like, we saw that from that fight. You know, he was coming off a Mexico vacation, short notice fight. He came in, you know, got pieced up in that first round. Connor threw everything but the kitchen sink at him, and it still wasn't enough to take him out. You know, the outpointing system works when you're fighting against a guy who maybe is not as skilled as you in striking, but I think that Nate Diaz boxing is, you know, still, and a lot of people give it credit, but outside of, you know, MMA circles, he still gets slept on a lot for his boxing, and it is top notch. So, you know, when he utilizes that jab and finds that range, he is a tough, tough guy to deal with, and he has a very long, you know, reachy kind of jab that, you know, we saw kind of pop Connor in that second round. And I just think that that combined with his threats on the ground, it's going to be too much for Connor again. I mean, you saw how it played out the last time. I don't see it playing out, you know, much different. Maybe Connor, I think, will certainly not be looking for that, you know, one-punch knockout that he was looking for in the first round. He might make it a couple more rounds, but I think eventually this is probably going to catch up with him, and Nate Diaz is going to start, you know, landing those shots at will. And eventually, I think it's going to go to the ground again, where Connor will not be able to, you know, match Nate Diaz on the ground.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you in terms of the back and forth. When it was first announced as the immediate rematch, my initial instinct was, well, nothing changes. Nathan Diaz gets the victory. Then I spent a little while kind of leaning towards Conor McGregor because the circumstances of the first fight, there was a great big change. I mean, he was preparing to fight at 55, going up to 70. He talked about, you know, I just threw my meal plan out the door and started eating steak. And, you know, you watch that fight back and he's throwing haymakers the whole time. He's trying to land that one shot power blow that dropped so many guys at featherweight, and he landed it a bunch. It just didn't work the same way because Nathan Diaz is a bigger human being, and there's, you know, not as much force behind it as there is at featherweight, where he's at least able to absorb it a little better. And the closer we get to this, and now coming off of everything that transpired this afternoon in Las Vegas, I'm with you. I can't see myself picking against Nate Diaz. I don't think Conor McGregor can fight a smart, tactical, patient fight against this guy for 25 minutes. I don't think he can stop him. Nate hasn't been stopped very often in his career. Josh Thompson caught him with a head kick. That's really about it. Otherwise, he's a guy that's in there with you for the full duration. I think that plays in Nate's favor. I think the fact that the timing of his boxing is so off kilter, and he has a way of just interrupting rhythms so well that it stops guys in their tracks, and it just gets you out of pace. And so you see all the stuff that Connor's doing at his workouts and in the embedded when he's working with Owen Roddy, and he's throwing these combinations. What doesn't happen in there is Nate Diaz sticking that left hand in his face or swinging in one of those right hands that just interrupt everything you're trying to do and makes you have to reset. Nate is great at catching you coming out of stuff and when you're finishing and at weird times. And I'm like you, I just think that over the course of 25 minutes, Nate's again able to take the best that Connor has to offer, weather those storms, frustrate him, and finds a way to get it done in the later stages of this fight. I honestly don't know that making all the adjustments that Team McGregor has made going into this and breaking from everything that they have done. So they made a great big deal going into the first fight about, we didn't bring in any southpaws. We never trained specific for one opponent. It's always just about us and what we're going to do and being able to adapt to whatever situation. So things go south once and suddenly that's all out, and it's bring in the tall, rangy southpaw with great boxing. Bring in Dylan Danis to work on my jiu-jitsu. We're going to focus specifically on Nate. To me, all that does is reiterate how much Nate Diaz is in this dude's head, how much this fight weighs on Conor McGregor. And I don't know that it's the kind of pressure and force on him that's going to make him perform even better. I appreciate the bravado of of every athlete and saying, I'm going to get it done in this time. I've made the adjustments. I've learned from my mistakes. I don't know that that's the case. And I can't wait to find out whether I'm right or not on Saturday night. It's the Keyboard Kimura Podcast, Province Sports Radio, Patrick Shivik-Linsky, E. Spencer Kite. This is a fight card that kind of been slept on a little bit. A lot of people, I think, incorrectly identifying it as not that great. Looking at Conor McGregor and Nathan Diaz and saying everything else is just kind of meh. I disagree. I think it's a great fight card from top to bottom. It may not be as stacked with names as something like UFC 200 was, or even UFC 199 and 198, but I like a lot of the fights on this card. Rather than going through step by step and breaking all of them down and talking about all of them, one, I've got some videos that are running all week on Province Sports, so you could go and check those out at the top of all of my articles, day by day, breaking down a different fight a little bit, just why you should watch it. So shameless self-promotion there. But I wanted you and I to just pick a couple of fights, pick a fight that really jumps out at you that you can't wait to see on Saturday night.
I mean, how can you not, as an MMA fan, be pumped up to see Anthony Rumble Johnson and Glover Teixeira throw down in the octagon? I mean, if you're not excited for that fight, you should go watch curling or something like that. All due respect to those guys, but come on. I think that, you know, this fight between Rumble and Glover is going to be just an absolute barn burner. I think that's your fight of the night. These are two guys who hit like friggin' Mack trucks. The two hardest hitters in the division, if not in the UFC. You know, these are two of the hardest hitting guys, period. Not just light heavyweights, period, we're talking about. So I'm thrilled that this fight is finally going down. It was supposed to be the co-main event of the Shevchenko card that we had a little while back. It's happening here, and I think it's stylistically a phenomenal fight and one that I'm really excited to see, because you get, you know, Rumble Johnson, who is, you know, coming in here and off a win against Ryan Bader, has, you know, never looked better and one shot away from another title shot against DC. So, you know, this will be a very, very interesting matchup. And Glover Teixeira, man, like, good luck trying to, you know, put that guy away. He is really, really tough and durable. And like I said, hits almost as hard as Rumble, if not as hard. And I just can't wait. It's going to be like, you know, seeing two friggin' trucks on a collision course. It's definitely got all the makings of a fight of the night. And I think that, you know, with what Glover also presents on, you know, on the ground as well, could be interesting for Anthony Johnson, who's, you know, been working on his takedown defense. We saw it in the Phil Davis fight when he came back into the UFC. You know, will Glover try to go for that takedown and maybe try to submit Anthony Johnson on the ground as DC did, was able to do successfully? Or will he try to stand and bang with him? I mean, it's going to be just so many interesting things going on in this fight, and I'm just thrilled that it's happening.
Well, and longtime listeners of this show will remember our conversation about this fight following Glover Teixeira's win over Rashad Evans back in April. You could go back and listen to it in the archives and find it, because Glover Teixeira made, and I've referred to it this week, I've done a couple pieces here, a story up today on Glover Teixeira from an interview I did with him last week, one coming tomorrow with AJ. I've referred to it all week as the polite invitation to face punch each other for money. Because it was just like, it really was. It was a nice, sweet, I would really, listen, I know Anthony Johnson doesn't have anything going on. What do you say, man? Let's make some money. Let's do this. Cut to AJ. AJ's smiling. And they're going to do the damn thing. I'm with you. Bonkers fight. I think it's one of those fights where it could be done in about 12 seconds. It could very well go 15 minutes, because these guys are more complete fighters than we ever give them credit for, because they are just savage knockout artists that go in there and swing bungalows and put people to sleep. But I agree with you. It is a phenomenal fight. I do believe it sets up the next title challenger in the light heavyweight division. I know a lot of people are kind of like, yeah, but John Jones is the only one I want to see fight for the title. I'm not in that camp. John Jones is out of the picture for right now. Maybe he's coming back sooner than expected, but I always want to keep moving forward. I was at the fight between DC and Anthony Johnson, and I remember DC flying across the cage in the opening seconds when AJ hit him with one of those big ass right hands. I would like to see that again. He's been working with Neil Melanson to improve his ground game. Talked about that when I talked to him last week, singing the praises of his coaching staff. And yes, Glover Teixeira got beat by John Jones, but it's a different fight with DC and we haven't seen it. So I'm all for it. For me, there's a couple different fights that I could definitely talk about. Anytime Donald Cerrone fights, it's great. Anytime Tim Means fights, for that matter, it's always entertaining. And I like the fact that he's facing a hungry kid in Saba Homesi, who's jumping in off a win a couple of weeks back. The one that jumps out for me, though, is Cody Garbrandt and Takeya Mizugaki. I've talked about it a couple of times over the course of this week and going into this event. I think Cody gets a title shot with a victory, provided it is, you know, not a split decision and it's not kind of a dull, tepid fight. If he goes out there and just wrecks Takeya Mizugaki the way that Dominic Cruz did or the way that he did to Thomas Almeida earlier in the year, I think there's no way that he doesn't end up sharing the cage with Dominic Cruz. There has been a lot of talk between the two. It is gaining momentum. There's the obvious ties with Team Alpha Male. I just think that makes this a fight that you can't miss. And I know a lot of people have said, well, why the hell is it on Fox Sports and not on the pay-per-view when you've got Hyungyu Lim and Mike Perry and Tim Means and Saba Homesi on the main card. But to me, the Fox Sports 1 placement is absolutely the right place for this. You want to put that fight in front of as many eyes as humanly possible so that you can talk about Cody Garbrandt and you can get him calling out Dominic Cruz on television, cut back to the studio where I guarantee you Dominic Cruz is hanging out, analyzing this fight card and says, yeah, all right, kid, let's do this. You think you can do what all your other Alpha Fail teammates haven't? I'm in. Let's set this up. That's why you do it this way. I think that's what's happening. And regardless of that, if that's what comes next, I think this is another great opportunity for a guy that has been on this show, a guy that I think has a world of talent and a huge championship upside in Cody No Love.
Yeah, I agree with you on that fight, and it's a great opportunity. You know, I'm glad you mentioned, you know, that it's going to be on that slot on Fox Sports 1. And I think it's a great opportunity. It wasn't a missed opportunity for the UFC to kind of put him on the back end of the main card. I think it's perfectly positioned in that main event slot of the prelim card. And I think this is an opportunity for Cody Garbrandt to kind of earn, you know, that signature win. You know, I think he already earned a lot of, you know, eyes with the Thomas Almeida fight. Definitely a lot of people were shocked that, you know, he was able to do that to a guy who we all touted as, you know, a bantamweight destroyer. And, you know, coming in now against Takeya Mizugaki, who is a very savvy vet and a guy who is much different stylistically than Thomas Almeida. This is a really good test for Cody Garbrandt. I mean, I really do like this matchup, because Mizugaki can be a tricky guy to deal with, and he's going to put, you know, Garbrandt probably in some situations that he hasn't faced before against guys who are, you know, less experienced. Mizugaki has a ton of experience and a guy who certainly doesn't lose his cool when, you know, the pressure's on. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in this fight. It's a great opportunity for Cody Garbrandt to earn a big signature win and, like you said, hopefully get that title shot down the line.
Yeah, it's the kind of fight that he needs to win against the type of opponent he needs to beat in order to solidify that shot at a belt and solidify that opportunity to go forward and sort of skip to the head of the line. I think it's a really interesting fight. I think this is going to end up being one of those cards that kind of surprised some people. I think there's going to be a couple of fights that before the main event that really open some eyes that people end up talking about, that generate some buzz, that we get to that main event and it feels like a crescendo that we didn't quite get with UFC 200. But we will talk about that early next week. We wanted to keep these a little more bite-sized going forward because we're trying to do them twice a week. And next week we'll probably have more than two because the UFC's coming back to town. you and me are going to be spending some time together. We're going to be hanging out, doing a bunch of good stuff on Province Sports and on this podcast and all over social media. So I won't keep you very much longer. Let everybody know how to follow you this weekend as we talk smack about these fights and our picks, which will be dropping a little later on in the week on the site.
Yes, sir. Of course. So you guys can follow me at Pat Triglinski on Twitter. That's at PATCWIKLINSKI. And, I'll be definitely, tweeting all about the good fun going on this weekend in Las Vegas. Make sure to stay tuned all next week, obviously, for the Vancouver card. We're going to have lots of content out there talking to, a bunch of different fighters and going to have some fun stuff. So certainly give me a follow and make sure you tune in to Keyboard Kimura on the Province. Follow us. Give us a like, share us, do all that stuff. Make sure you're watching.
And me, as always, guys, you know how to stay on top of my stuff at Spencer Kite on both Twitter and Instagram. Been trying to do the Instagram a little bit more, take a few more pictures, put a few more things up. It's going to be hot and heavy next week with Instagram stories as we're in Vancouver doing stuff at these live events. So definitely give me a follow. Follow Patrick. Follow Patrick on Instagram too. Sneakerheads. He's got a mean shoe game.
I'm taking me sneaker shopping in Vancouver.
Check him out. He's got a mean shoe game. I got to give it to the young fella. He's got a mean shoe game. As I said earlier, though, we will have the punch drunk predictions up on the site on Friday. I got a little bit of a lead. I don't want to be bragging about it because, as we know in this sport, things can change on a dime. So I'm just going to stay quiet, enjoy my lead. I'm going to enjoy the fights this weekend. Patrick's going to enjoy the fights this weekend. We hope that you do as well. Most importantly, be good to one another, and don't throw cans of Monster Energy drink at anybody.
You've been listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of the Province. Read the Keyboard Kimura blog on theprovince.com, follow them on Twitter at Keyboard Kimura, or visit them on Facebook at facebook.com/Keyboard Kimura.